Last weekend's feast of the baptism of the Lord marked the end of the Christmas season, but it also marked a beginning. It marks the beginning of ordinary time. And it's helpful for us to think of baptism as a beginning because for us as Christians, baptism is our gateway to the sacramental life, and it's our entryway into the life of the church. Last weekend here at the cathedral, we had three baptisms at two different masses, three total, two at one at another. And we baptized three newborns at the font here. Baptisms, a beautiful celebration for the community, these three young families, but really for all of us to be present. After the newborns were baptized, they are anointed with sacred chrism, and then a white garment is placed on them. And then their baptismal candle is lit from the paschal candle, which is at the entrance of church to the right as you leave. Each of these gestures of the baptism has a prayer, and the one for the lighting of the baptismal candle begins, "Receive the light of Christ." Super simple, but enormously rich. Receive the light of Christ. And it's a line that in many ways resembles a line from today's first reading. It's very magnificent, today's first reading from Isaiah chapter 49. And there God says to Isaiah, "I will make you a light to the nations." It says something powerful in its own way about baptism because it means that it's not enough for us to receive the light of Christ. As Christians, we're called to be bearers of the light of Christ in our world, to be men and women, even children, who bear this light and ultimately find ways to share it with others. I'm speaking this weekend at all the masses, this being the last one, about the theme of stewardship. So I thought it'd be good to begin with a bit of a personal witness on the importance of stewardship in my own life and tell you about a really significant moment in my life that was decisive in many ways. It's a story that some of you are familiar with, I think. I didn't grow up in Louisville. I grew up in southern Kentucky on a farm in a small town in what's considered mission territory. There are very few Catholics in that part of the state, but all my ancestors were Catholics. And when I was five, my dad, who had been an altar server, volunteered me to be an altar server at the parish where I went. Now, five is very young to do most things in life. It's very young to be an altar server. I was in over my head. When new people are serving, I sometimes tell them that I made every mistake you can make as a server, and I invented some that no one had ever made before. That's how creative I was being a server. In any case, it was hugely significant in my life. So why did my dad do this? Part of me thinks that he wanted some peace in the pew because I was really wiggly. I had a hard time sitting still. I would antagonize my two sisters. I'm a middle child. So it was probably best for the family to get me out of the pew to come to the front of church. I asked my dad as an adult, I think I was a priest when I asked him this. I said, "Why did you volunteer me as so young, five, to be a server?" And he said, "There weren't many servers. The parish then, they didn't do a very good job, and I thought, you couldn't be any worse, really, than they were." So that's kind of how it worked out. I think there was more to it, but at least that's what he told me. And I think it changed my life. I still might have been a priest, even if my dad didn't do this. But as I look back, I know the Lord really shaped my life through that decisive gesture. Got to meet a lot of great priests, a lot of great people. The rest, as they say, was history. I share this story of my life. It's a small one, but an important one, because I think it was a gesture of stewardship in a real way. My life, my dad's life, my family's life. And stewardship really for each of us as Christians should be no less important than it was in that moment for me. What does this look like then, stewardship? I'd like to point to two different miracles that take place in the Gospels that I think in their own way reveal the inner life of stewardship. The first takes place at the wedding of Cana, Christ's first miracle in John's Gospel, and the second is in the multiplication of loaves. What do they have in common, these miracles? Christ doesn't just create enough, he creates the superabundance. There's more than enough wine for the wedding party. There's more than enough loaves and fish. They have to be collected into baskets when the meal is over. What they also have in common is that those who serve the wine, those who distribute loaves and fish, are closest to the miracle. It's part of the genius of serving in the church. It means being close to the miracle itself. Ultimately, many people came to realize what transpired when those two miracles take place. But who knew first? It was those who served. They were closest to Christ They saw perhaps even what he did as he did it, and they took part in the miracle itself. This is the meaning of stewardship in a way, to be those who serve, to be close to Christ, and to be close to the miracle of what Christ is sharing with us. It's an image really that speaks beautifully to the life of the cathedral. I'm biased, but I suspect there's not another parish in the diocese that has so many committed volunteers of all ages who support the life of this local church. Many of whom do this in 2, 3, 4, 5 different ministries. It's incredible how many ways people find to be engaged and committed here. It's part of my responsibility in speaking about stewardship to thank the people who do this so extravagantly, sometimes over many years, decades. It's incredible people who do such. So this is a way to say thanks to you. But it's also a way to invite people who perhaps are newer or haven't given much thought to ways to be involved in the life of the local parish. And there's many ways to do this. We have a helpful image of contributing in stewardship and what we do right now as we celebrate the Mass. What we do in the Mass is built on the real presence of Christ. Christ is truly present in the Liturgy of the Word, in Sacred Scripture. He's truly present in the Liturgy of the Eucharist, in the Eucharist itself. So as people of God, as parishioners, what we do is we come together with people hopefully we like, we get along with, but more importantly, we are people who are building our lives on the same foundation, the real presence of Christ. And as we build upon this foundation, we're obligated, in a sense, to do it with our own form of real presence. It's the best gift that we can give. It's the best gift that God gives to us, the real presence of Christ. It's the best gift we can give to God in return, our real presence. It may look a little bit different for each of us. We know that there are many ways to be involved here, and it's possible that given the many gifts of the people who come here, you may have ideas for new opportunities, new ministries, new gifts that can be offered here at the cathedral. We also know that one of the most important ways to sustain this mission, to keep the doors open, to keep people here, is through our financial support as well. We know that we're in a capital campaign that's been really successful. It helps to speak to many of the immediate needs that we have here in the church, but it doesn't speak to our regular offertory need that we have. As a first-time pastor, I'm very aware that every weekend it takes $15,825 for us to break even. That includes paying utilities, not just for this building, but for 3 others, and to pay salaries for the many committed and very talented people who work here at the cathedral. So, next weekend, there will be a lay witness talk at each of 4 Masses. The person who is going to speak at this Mass next weekend is here. He's known to a number of you. I'm not going to point him out because some of you might not come back. No, he's going to do a great job. But he's very modest, so I won't say who it is. So, give a heartfelt listen. At this Mass or whichever other one you come to next weekend, it's not easy to come up here and to speak to fellow parishioners. And also, give some thought to what will take place in 2 weekends. There will be a stewardship fair in the Undercroft after each of the Masses. You can come downstairs for a bite to eat. You can learn more about ministries that exist, maybe some that you're a part of or some that you want to join. You could take a photo for our online directory. You could even become a member of the parish if you're not, and meet somebody that you've never met before. There's a lot of great people here coming from many different places. We're a very broadly scattered group of people coming together from lots of different spots, so it could be a great way to meet more people. So keep those 2 things in mind, the lay witness talk next weekend and the stewardship fair in the Undercroft. 2 final thoughts. 1, there's a natural resistance that each of us has to new things arising, such as this, and we hear a voice, myself included sometimes, that says, what does it ultimately matter? Church was here before I came. The church is going to be here after I go. What does it really matter? My contribution. Here's the response I would give to you, but also to myself, when this is a temptation. It comes from the Creed. In a few minutes, when we say the Creed in the 2nd paragraph, we'll say light from light. Speaks of Christ relative to the Father. It's a mystery of the Trinity, light from light. It's also a mystery of the Church, in a way. 2,000 years after Christ's life, here we are. proclaiming the good news, receiving it into our lives. How many lights of faith were lit to bear the good news into our day so that we can hear and know of the life of Christ, the life of the church, the life of God? How many lights of faith were lit to get that message to us over 2,000 years? It's no secret that there are plenty troubling trends when it comes to religious life in the U.S., some places around the world. Certainly as a priest, I'm aware of what some of the statistics are, but ever so often this thought comes to me and it's overwhelming. We're still doing this after 2,000 years. We're still saying words that Christians said in the first century, still saying words when we worship that Christ himself said during his earthly life. What other reality encompasses this, still offers something so life-giving 2,000 years after someone's life? We're still here. It's pretty fascinating. And think of the people who will be here 2,000 years after us, the men, women, and children who will be on this planet, hopefully, still here. The second coming hasn't happened yet. Think of the people who will still be here, the need that they have to receive the message that we have received. It only happens light from light. Receive the light of Christ. Be a bearer of the light of Christ in the world. So here's the second thought. It's to the point. It comes from Matthew chapter 5. The Lord gives a great address there. It's called the Sermon on the Mount. His public ministry begins in chapter 4. So the people have only been with him for a very short period of time. He gives many different teachings in this chapter, but in one of them, he says to the crowd, "You are the light of the world." It's a relevant message, and it's important, it's powerful for what he doesn't say. He doesn't say to them, "You will be the light of the world when you finally get your act together, when you overcome all your personal deficits and shortcomings." It happens in the present tense. You are the light of the world. Ultimately, that's a message of stewardship, to become light in the world, knowing how much the world needs it.